Here's Garden for Life with Grace Flajancic and Jeffrey Riley.
Grace, good to have you back. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me here.
So let me get just a general sense from you. I know what I'm doing as a gardener when we move into actually summer itself, but what are some of the things that you keep in mind as summer comes into us?
Well, I hope nobody else did what I did, which was an oopsie and forget to water for 2 days, and my young transplants were not happy with that. So hopefully you all remembered that it's getting warmer and to be on top of your watering, because mine is not on an automatic system.
That was actually one of my first questions. Okay, so I'm glad we're starting basically on the same page here, because when I put my transplants outside, even though I thought I was watering enough, they looked all droopy by the next day and then the day after.
Yeah, they definitely go through some transplanting shock once they're out of the happy nursery in their pot, comfortable environment. Then you stick them in the ground and they are just kind of confused as to what's happening and need some time to adjust and grow those roots. So they need a little bit of extra attention.
Okay, so how much extra attention? When should we worry? I know what I did is I got off my weekly thing with the fertilizer and actually did a little extra fertilizing in advance, hoping that, for example, the tomatoes would green up a little more because they were looking a little anemic the first couple of days.
Yeah, so it's kind of hard to say, and some of it depends on what your garden's conditions are. But most of us for veggies, they're going to be pretty full sun. So a little more attention on the watering them in the mornings, trying not to water the leaves and getting the leaves wet midday in case they burn.
Mm-hmm. Because the droplets can actually be like lenses.
Can magnify that sun rays and burn the leaves. And that's not what you want when your juvenile plants just trying to get started. Definitely the first 3 days being more intense with the watering for those transplants, especially now that we're starting to get warmer temperatures, they will go through that water really quickly.
Okay, I'm starting to feel pretty good about the watering them, because basically every time they look droopy, I just gave them another half an hour of the, and it was with the soaker hoses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a good method.
Now, why water in the mornings? I do that, but I'm curious to know what the advantages to watering in the mornings versus in the evening.
Yeah, so evening around here, because it's so hot, is still a good time to water, but some of the concern is you're going into those cooler temperatures, so there is some potential disease risks that go on with having the wet roots and the kind of cooler temperature. And if you're getting leaves wet, things like maybe powdery mildew could be an issue. I'm not sure that it's the hugest issue, but generally it's better, you know, to give the water at the beginning of the day so it has that fresh supply of water to use up and then be kind of cooled off in the evening, where it's not really photosynthesizing and not using up all that water during the night.
So basically it's like wet diaper syndrome if they have water at night or something.
It can be sometimes that way.
Mm-hmm. All right. So talk about the season as it presented, because I know that it was just thinking about, you know, humans dress for the weather, that it was only about 2 weeks before it got really hot in early June that I was still wearing some thermal underwear on morning walks around sunrise. And so it seemed to change very fast.
Yeah, that took me by surprise. And we had a couple really hot days earlier and then went back to cold days. And my kale that I had planted earlier, it bolted because it said, oop, I'm getting some temperature cues to flower. And I was disappointed because I wanted to eat a lot of kale and make some salads. But yeah, that's one thing that is a little kind of tricky, is knowing what's coming up next and predicting our weather.
I have learned so much over the time that we've been doing Garden for Life. And so remind people what bolting is.
Bolting is when your leafy greens like lettuce, kale, when they start to flower. So they're taking away energy from developing those leaves that are going to be large that we want to use in our salads, and putting all that energy into flowering and reproducing. So they're not really going to grow leaves anymore. And it's kind of the end of that plant's life. It wants to focus on the next part of the cycle of creating offspring. So it's unfortunate when it happens, because that means our plant, we're not going to get that food we want.
There's no going back. I mean, if they've already bolted, and even if you try to cut the blossoms off or something, they're not going to go back and devote the energy to the leaves?
They're not really going to do that. They've gotten the cues to say, oh, it's time to move on, next generation.
This is Garden for Life on the Jefferson Exchange with Grace Florjancic, the Master Gardener Program Coordinator for Jackson County. We can take your emails for future programs of Garden for Life at jx@jeffnet.org. I'll print them up and have them ready for our next Master Gardener session. So jx@jeffnet.org. I'm curious to know, even for a longtime gardener like yourself, if you get surprised, well, obviously the weather can always be a surprise, but things like soil conditions. When I got out to the garden this year, I was surprised at just how dry and chunky it was. And I thought I'd been doing okay through the winter.
Yeah, and that's definitely, for me, I moved to Oregon about a year and a half ago, so it's a little different from Virginia, where I'm from.
Oh, yes.
And so there's definitely a lot of surprises for me, and it's one of those you try your best to prepare the soil for the next year, and sometimes it just does not agree, especially if you've got some heavy clays that are the shrink swell clays. It can really shift the ground a little bit, and trying to do your best to make those amendments to make it got more organic matter, better for veggies, but it can be a kind of luck of the draw of what you get to in the spring.
What kinds of amendments can you still add at the point when things are already growing and everything's in the ground and it's heating up?
Yeah, there's definitely some fertilizing you can be doing. Some plants really need that boost. Some are, we call them heavy feeders. They're going to want more fertilizer as opposed to some light feeders. Each plant's going to be different, so it's hard to give a straight recommendation. So it really is looking at your particular crop and seeing what the recommended time frame for fertilizing and how much. And that's where soil testing is a big thing of if you haven't tested in the past, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, it always helps to do a little look into what you've got going on.
What kind of testing and what the, I mean, where do you take your soil and what do you do with it?
Yeah, that's a big question a lot of people have for the Master Gardeners. There's a lot of labs around Oregon, and the Master Gardeners at the plant clinic have a list of available labs. Places like the Grange Co-op will take your sample and ship it to a lab to get tested. What they're really looking for is the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium contents. Those are kind of the big limiting factors in plant growth. And if you want to get really into the nitty-gritty, you can look for other micronutrients that are being used up throughout the year in your soils and take a good look at that. That's something maybe if you're growing tomatoes and having issues with blossom end rot, you might need to take a peek into that calcium.
Well, and the three things you mentioned, the nitrogen, the phosphorus, the potassium, those are the NPK that we see the numbers for in all the fertilizers.
Mm-hmm.
And so this tells me, though, that you can be more careful about picking a fertilizer. If you know the condition of your soil, you want a little more nitrogen in some cases, a little more potassium in others.
Yes, that is definitely true. We have a tendency to just pick what's easily available, add it to our garden bed, and get into a routine and just keep adding. But sometimes we can kind of hit a limit where it's not doing any benefit to keep adding more nitrogen or more phosphorus. There's enough there in the soil already.
Is it kind of like humans with vitamins? The soil just can't use it if you have too much?
Yeah, the plants can only absorb so much. And there are some instances of plants with a lot of nitrogen fertilizer being a little too happy and vigorous that aphids will be more likely to attack those plants. So there is some downside of over-fertilizing.
Oh, interesting. I never thought of that. But you can make the plants a little more attractive than they normally would be for the things that are going to attack them.
Mm-hmm. Make them a little extra appealing.
Mm-hmm. Come back to the thing we more or less started off with, which was the weather conditions. And of course, you know, in early June, we had that real spike in the heat. What kinds of things should you do to minimize or at least to help your plants through a heat stress period when it gets suddenly hot like that?
Yeah, if you know ahead of time and can check the weather forecast that it's going to be hot the next few days, making sure you're watering, which I did not do, and getting that water to them early, keeping an eye on it. There are some people I know that depending on the crop, if it's something that likes to be a little cooler and they're trying to avoid those heat spikes, they'll add a shade kind of wall, just having two stakes at the end of their raised bed and adding a shade cloth vertically so that the plants won't be in full sun all day and they get a couple hours in the shade.
I was thinking about that very thing. Okay, so shade cloth is appropriate for super hot stuff.
Mm-hmm, especially if you've got some things like those lettuces and kales that you're trying to not let bolt and get too hot and trying to extend that season just a little bit longer.
This is Garden for Life on the Jefferson Exchange. Grace Florjancic, the Master Gardener Program Coordinator for Jackson County, our guest on the program. And we can take emails for future sessions, not for this one, but we can take emails that we'll print up and have available for our next session of Garden for Life. Send those to jx@jeffnet.org, jx@jeffnet.org. Again, billboard those Garden for Life, and I'll make sure we take those up. Speaking of the leafy greens like the kales and the lettuces, I mean, this is the time of year you don't generally have those. They're finishing up at this time of year, right?
Yeah, they're finishing up. My kale bolted earlier than I wanted it to, but it's getting too hot for them, and we're moving into those warmer crops, those tomatoes, those peppers, those zucchini that need that heat to really go.
And how necessary? I mean, but you can have too much heat, as we've been talking about.
Yes.
Too,
yeah. Yes, tomatoes especially, mm-hmm. after above 95 degrees is kind of when they stop putting on fruit, when mm-hmm. that's the kind of average temperature in the day. So when we get to later summer and we've constantly got days in the high 90s, the tomatoes can kind of wean off and won't produce as much flowers and fruit.
Okay, no more fruit setting there. And that was the other thing I discovered too about tomatoes in particular, was that you want to be careful what you pick, because you want to kind of think about your harvest. When you're putting things into the ground, do you want a tomato plant that's going to deliver periodically over the summer, or one that's going to give harvest all at once?
Yeah, that's a really big difference between determinate and indeterminate tomatoes, where determinate's going to give you that big batch all at the one time, and indeterminate's going to be continually growing tomatoes.
Good things to know when you're planning, but that's a reason to read seed packets and
yes.
Read the starts when you buy them in that form at the stores.
Yes, and if you're getting late to the game in planting tomato starts, any early harvest varieties that are going to develop those fruits quicker, and so you can get a fruit set in before that heat really ramps up at the late part of summer is a good idea.
So if you have been a little lazy, or let's say on vacation or something, and you're a little late getting stuff into the ground, I mean, there's some things that, I mean, at some point, are you just kind of past the viable date to get the vegetables off of those plants this year?
Right. There's a point where you won't be able to harvest it. It'll start getting too cold. Peppers especially, the hotter the pepper, the longer it needs that heat. And if you wait too long to get those into the ground, it probably won't give you a lot of fruit.
What about the opposite problem? If you have stuff that's growing and not necessarily in the garden, like in our case, apples on the tree, and you notice some stuff dropping off or blossoms dropping off some of the plants, is that a cause for concern?
At this point, the trees have flowered, they have been fertilized, and the petals will kind of fall off a little bit, and you won't really see those pretty petals still on the tree. That's a part of their process. The fruit will start to develop. If you look and can see kind of on an apple, they probably look like small nubs starting to develop, like a cherry, little uh-huh. berries on there. That means that flower was fertilized, and you're going to have a full apple in the fall.
Okay, so well, that's good to know. So not a problem if you start to see fruit dropping on the ground or something?
Yeah, trees will naturally do some thinning. So if they've got a heavy set of many flowers were fertilized and they don't think that they have enough energy to support all that, some of the fruits will drop off and leave the rest to kind of keep going. If it's all your fruit, that might be something to look into.
Okay.
But
as I look at the list of things that people want to consider doing in the beginning of summer, in June specifically, in the garden, one of the things I notice is there are some calls for starting to plant your fall garden. And I wonder where you come down on the idea of just letting part of the garden rest for part of the year.
Yeah, it's definitely a theory or school of thought of letting the garden rest. And in those times, I would definitely recommend cover crops. Things that are grasses and legumes that are going to make channels into the bed so water can get down in there, put back some nitrogen. So some stuff that you're not really intending to harvest, but just let it be covered so weeds don't get in it. It won't be exposed and completely dried out. It'll have that ecosystem for all the good soil microbes and critters that are decomposing and putting back nutrients into the ground. So that is a good alternative if you're not going to do fall crops or anything over the winter.
Okay, we'll pick up the conversation in a future broadcast, and we can take your emails for that to jx@jeffnet.org. Grace Florjancic is Master Gardener Program Coordinator for Jackson County. Thanks again for Garden for Life.
Thank you for having me. It was great.